I just love getting unfiltered and unfettered.
We are back, unfiltered and unfettered from the Monolith Studio on B. Emily, thank you for that introduction. This is the co-host of Unfiltered and Unfettered with my other co-host, Francis One. Francis, good evening.
Francis One. Tony, my friend. Good to be back. It just seems like it's been a lot longer than 2 weeks. I don't know if because all this stuff's been happening or what.
Well, there's a lot happening. I know I went to spend a week in Chicago.
Got to see
my first Cubs game.
I saw your Facebook pictures.
Yes, with some lovely young locals that made my evening very nice. But my first trip to Wrigley Field, that was very nice.
It's a beautiful park, isn't it?
It is. Old school, man. They still got a scoreboard in the back where people are actually sliding numbers in and out.
Yeah, day baseball is phenomenal.
That's very cool. This is episode 9, and you know what, Francis? Perhaps the most bombastic 2 weeks we've had.
You know, we always say it. If you listen to all our other episodes.
We do always say
it. We always say there's just a ton to talk about. We're actually telling the truth tonight. I mean, there literally is a metric ton to talk about tonight.
Yes, there is. So we are back like the common North American brown cockroach. You don't always see us, but we're never far away, and we always come out when you turn out the lights. Let's get to shotgunning the news. All right, Francis. First up, back in the limelight, Benghazi.
You know, I was curious to see the results of that, the new testimony. I guess I need to use this phrase that the liberal media has said they didn't learn anything new. I watched it. I heard a man say they had special forces on a plane ready to go and they called them back.
Yes.
That's new because that goes against what Hillary Clinton said, that there was no request for backup. Well, you and I both know, right? Military men don't get on an airplane heading down a runway unless they're told to do so.
Right.
So, this is looking shady for her. She's going to need to recover.
So, back in the news, more testimony about it. It's not going to go away, I don't think.
No.
And I think that we're going to readdress this a little bit when we start talking later on about the media and the compilation of some of the things happening in the Obama administration.
You know, and these quote-unquote whistleblowers that have come forward now, all they've done is load the shotgun for 2016.
Yeah.
If Hillary runs, she's going to hear about this every time she opens her mouth. As well she should. She needs to answer
this. That's right.
This.
That's right.
Because she Absolutely. Said in front of a meeting, you and I watched it, under oath, she said there was no call for backup.
Right.
And yet, on an aircraft, our special forces and their commander waiting to head to Benghazi.
Yep.
Somebody needs to reconcile that.
All right, this is not going a bit way. We've talked about it since the first podcast. We'll be back with this next. All right, next up, Chris Christie getting the lap band.
Nice.
Stomach banding.
Tell you what, the only reason he even brought this up was it became obvious that he had dropped so much weight. I just kind of like the fact that he kept it quiet. I mean, he had this done a while ago. It wasn't like he just did this. And he's kept it quiet. You know, he says he did it for his family. I'm going to take him at his word. You know, I know the 2016 election is looming large, but, I went under the same thing, looked at my kids and thought, I'm going to be old when they get out of high school. I started taking better care of myself. I dropped a, 4-liter Diet Coke habit a day. I can believe him when he says he wanted to be around for his kids.
And, yeah, it's admirable, and it will make him more electable, although I don't know how electable it will make him anyways. But, all right, let's go next. All right, next up, Fran, we're going to do our traditional golf reference, the little hissy fit between Tiger and Sergio.
I tell you what, it was sad to watch, but here's what happens. They're playing together. They're about 50 yards apart on the fairway, and Tiger Woods draws a huge crowd. Sergio is setting up over his ball. Tiger Woods pulls out a club that indicates that he's going to go for the green, and now I understand you don't, nor do you care, nor get the significance of this, but that was a big deal, and so people started cheering that he was going to go for the green. Sergio says, well, he did that on purpose because that noise made me miss my shot. The problem there is, who helped him miss all his other shots? Because then he went on to put 3 balls in the water after that. So I think Sergio is way out of bounds here. There's been a new wrinkle, however. Tiger said, well, the marshal said that Sergio would hit already. Now, they couldn't see each other, right? Because
right.
Woods is 35 fans deep into off the side of the fairway, so he couldn't see him.
Right.
He claims the marshal said Sergio would hit, so it was okay for him to draw a club. The marshals have both come out and said, that's bullcrap.
It didn't
happen. He never asked us anything.
Right.
So, and I think that's a separate...
Here's the deal. I would like golf a lot better if they encourage the crowd to make noise. You can't even click a picture
right.
when these prima donnas are swinging a damn
right.
golf club.
Right.
You know, watch an NBA game and watch all the crap they're doing when somebody's trying to take a foul shot.
Right.
Okay?
Waving bobbleheads in front of, you know, yeah, absolutely.
All right, next. All right, next up, Kemet Gosnell. The abortion trial in Philadelphia accused of snipping babies' necks, which they said he did. Deaths of three babies. He got three life terms, caused the deaths of three babies, basically stabbed them with scissors. Nine former clinical workers were also convicted, and four others pleaded guilty to murder.
And they got him for the death of the woman, of the 41-year-old woman,
right? Right, yeah.
So I was surprised. I was happily surprised at the verdicts there. But man, if you can't read that story for very long without, I mean, it's gruesome stuff.
It is gruesome, very gruesome.
He's lucky that he's not getting the death penalty.
Yeah. All right, next, Sanford wins in Carolina and wins big, I might add.
It wasn't even close.
No.
I was stunned by that. But the good people of the 4th District, I think he represents in South Carolina.
South Carolina's first congressional.
Oh, first, okay.
Da, 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 da. Let me see. Am I reading that right? Yeah, I think so. Mm-hmm.
So he wins. He beats Stephen Colbert's sister, Colbert Bush, by quite a bit. So apparently his dalliances didn't really come into play. People liked him as governor. Really, why shouldn't they? I mean, South Carolina did really well under him as governor, so I don't. You know, it's one of those things where can you separate the job from the personal life?
And his statement was, I just want to acknowledge a God not just of second chances, but of third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and eighth chances,
yeah,
because that's the reality of our shared humanity. So this guy may have a few more skeletons in the closet.
If I was a fiancé, I'd be taking notes.
If he's leaning on the, the eighth, he sounds like a... LeBron James down there. Not just one, not just two. We're going up to eight.
Yeah.
Is a God of eight chances.
Yeah, that's incredible. But you know what? God bless America. The people voted, and he's in.
God bless America, indeed, my friend. All right, let's go to 90 Seconds of Minutia.
It's time for 90 Seconds of Minutia.
All right, friend, 90 Seconds of Minutia this time. Brought on by my podcast about government-sponsored birth control. You made a comment on the blog. We should stick this in 90 seconds of minutia. Go.
Well, you made some points on your blog. I don't know if implied or not, and I'm sure you'll correct me if I'm wrong, but that the government's pushing of birth control is sexifying. Am I saying that right? Sexifying the youth? Is that...
I don't know that that's the word I used, but that's adequate.
Something similar to that, but I'm using the wrong modifier. But and I think you referenced some other things like sex education for kindergartners.
Well, yeah, they're starting that in Chicago.
The lingerie thing I didn't get. I didn't.
Yeah, they sell lingerie. Well, that's not a government initiative.
Right.
I'm talking about society in
right.
general. We're bringing sexuality to younger and younger ages.
Right.
And if I was a 13-year-old, here's part of my point. If I was a 13-year-old and I found out the government had a program that would anonymously send me condoms, I would take that as some kind of endorsement for me to engage
well,
in sex.
I guess that's kind of where I was the thread I was picking at. And I think the question I asked you was, does the government providing condoms cause children to have sex, or is it because they're having sex are they providing these condoms?
Well, I'm not claiming causality.
Okay.
I'm not. But
I mean, you think
it is
because
an initiative.
You were given a free condom that says to you to go have sex?
No, I'm saying that if I was 13 and I found out the government sponsored a program that enabled me to get condoms anonymously, as a 13-year-old, I think that I would take that as an endorsement from the government that it was okay. I do believe.
But what would cause them to take it that way and not, they want me not to have children or get diseases? Like, why would you?
Really? You think a 13-year-old thinks that way?
Well, why would they think that they're getting an endorsement from the government? I mean, like, to me, that's not a different thought process. Those are the processes Like, if you could say to yourself, the government's giving me free condoms, they're endorsing my right to have sex.
Right.
That same person should then be able to process the other thought. Like, so what causes them to go to A and not B?
But that same person that we're talking about are 12 and 13-year-olds. And they're not capable of necessarily that type of rational thought.
But they're rational enough to think the government's giving them an endorsement? Like, I don't understand how you figure that they,
sure.
they can why think would that, you think, but not this.
Why would you think that if somebody's providing you something, how would you take that not as an endorsement? Because here's my point. If you're going to spend money to give them free condoms, why don't you just spend money on a damn public health campaign to tell 12 to 15-year-olds that they should not be having sex at that age? See, that might be more efficient.
No, I disagree. Because proven not to work.
Oh, no, that's not true. Fran, look at what we've done with smoking in this country. We've come close.
Well,
I don't want to say we've gotten rid of smoking, but public health campaigns has done an incredible job
with
reducing smoking.
And the fact that you've got to be a certain age to get them, right? So I mean, you make it harder and harder for kids to get them now.
I'm talking about public health campaigns that would educate our youth that it's okay not to have sex, to abstain. See,
well,
we seem to have
campaigns are out there. They're just not.
We
government
seem we funded. Seem to have this idea that we can't make them abstain. But we can certainly educate them on the dangers of what happens at that age for having sex. So then we're going to counter this by saying, well, you know, we can't stop them, so let's give them condoms and hope they use them. I don't agree with that reasoning.
The same thought process? Like, you can't make them stop having sex. You can't. Abstinence programs are out there. They're church run or they're civic run, not government funded. Probably, I wouldn't assume. I don't know that there could be some government funded abstinence programs out there. I doubt it. But you're not going to make a child not have sex. You certainly aren't going to make them put on a condom either. So just handing them the condom. And you seem to imply that these condoms are just shot out of a government dispenser.
No, I'm not.
Tell me that they don't come with saying, hey, this is for your safety.
No, I don't think 12 and 13-year-olds think that.
No, I'm not saying think that. I'm saying you tell me there's not literature that says when they're handed these things, condoms, and it says them on the package if you've ever read them. These are for the prevention of STDs.
Don't use them myself. I just go right back.
The prevention of STDs, pregnancy, and it even gives you the percentage of which they'll stop or not stop those events. So,
I don't think that 12 and 13-year-olds are looking for that kind of information on a pack of condoms when they get them. In addition, okay, my other point is...
How could they then accept an abstinence program? Like, your thought process here doesn't make sense.
No. You're telling me that a public health campaign equals a warning label on a condom package.
Well, it's not just a warning label on the condom package. Again, you can't tell me that these things are just laying in a hallway and you can pick them up without anyone seeing. You're telling me no one is telling them, look, bro, you need to wear this or you're going to get sick or you're going to get someone pregnant.
Yeah, no, not for kids. And in addition, I'll say that...
That's just bizarre that they're able
to... No, it's not bizarre.
Oh, absolutely, yes.
It's not bizarre. You're accrediting your logical thought process to 12 and 13 and 14-year-olds.
With your argument.
No, there's...
I've been endorsed by the government. I mean, how do they make that leap? I don't get that. Like, how can they make that leap and not say...
They're being able to be provided that. It's inherent. It's not an obvious thing.
It's inherent to you.
In addition to the fact that... as a parent, it's not the damn government's job to provide something to my child anonymously that is illegal for them to do. That's like saying we're going to provide needles to your kid in case they're a drug addict. How would you feel about it if somebody came down, if somebody from the street...
But don't they do that?
If somebody from the street, not to minors, if somebody from the down the street gave your daughter condoms for their own safety without your knowledge... That's what we're talking about.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I would have a problem with that. With it, like, if it's...
But why is it okay for the government to do that?
I'd have a problem with them not telling me about it. Yeah, I would have an issue with. But to say, I just
that's the program.
There's an epidemic that of pregnancy, teen pregnancy in the country. Clearly,
teen pregnancy is actually down,
but it's still huge.
It's still huge.
It's down, but that's like saying, you know, I mean. Down from a mountain. You know what I mean? It's just still
But I'm just saying, the government is starting to usurp your parental rights, and you seem to be okay with that. I'm not.
Well, only because I see what's going on. I mean, I spent 4 months in a room with 65 kids, and half of those don't have parents because the kids decided not to put them in the dumpster, as you then wrote in your next post. they decided to have the children and then abandon them because they were 15 years old. So, I mean, I think the government needs to step in and do something because they're there to protect the people, right? Is part of their job not to protect the people? And your implication is that somehow they're making this mandatory. No, I never implied that they're making it mandatory.
Like, no, I never did, said
well,
that.
But you didn't say that. But again, as you constantly say about the president, there's implications to words. And the posts and what you're saying now, it seems to imply that the government is forcing this on people instead of offering it. So they see an epidemic. I'll tell you what.
If I found out, if I had a 15-year-old daughter and I found out that they got a morning after pill without my knowledge, a minor child getting a morning after pill without my knowledge. See, I don't draw.
How did they get it done?
So they can go to a drugstore and get it. And they can show an ID and they can get a morning after pill.
Well, how would a 12
the government
year old
has said that that's okay for 15-year-olds.
Okay, but so let's get to the program, because maybe I'm misunderstanding something with them. So I'm a 12-year-old. How do I get government-free condoms?
Well, according to the article, they can go on the internet and they can anonymously order condoms. I guess I don't know. Have them shipped to them or whatever. They can. That's what the article said, that the government has a program for 12 to 16 year olds where they can anonymously procure condoms from the government with lubricant so that they don't break.
Well, so which would obviously render the thing pointless anyway. But so what's the difference between that and going in a can or a bathroom on an interstate and putting 50 cents in a machine? You know what I mean? Like, if that's anonymous and no one's there to monitor.
You know, I bought cigarettes before I was old enough to smoke them, but the government didn't give them to me.
Right.
It's not the government's job. I'm saying the government is usurping your parental rights, and we're starting to, at earlier and earlier ages in our society, say having sex is okay for younger and younger ages.
Yeah, again, I disagree with that message. I don't think that it's saying it's okay. They're saying they're having it. Let's see if we can stop the disease and the pregnancy that's plaguing the youth of this country. That's how I see it. Obviously, you see it differently.
I do see it differently.
But
yeah.
I just don't get how...
It's not the government's job to raise our kids. Okay. Now the fact that a lot of people don't do it very well is another issue.
If my 12-year-old kid is ordering condoms online, then I'm not raising him anyway. You know what I mean? How could a fucking abstinence program help my 12-year-old if he's already ordering condoms by himself online? You know what I mean? Like, there's no abstinence I'm going to be able to teach him if I can't teach him not to go online and order condoms.
Well, you know, I guess if you think it's okay, then you think it's okay. I don't.
No, I just don't understand how you figure that a kid would think this one track, but this rest of the stuff, he can't process that. He's too freaking stupid. But here, he could understand that the government's saying it's okay, go do this. But he certainly couldn't understand the government doesn't want him to contract diseases that may kill him.
Well, because I was a 13-year-old,
well, so
as you were,
I would
not have interpreted it that way.
But you would have interpreted that the government has given their FDA stamp of approval
tacitly,
for you to go have sex.
Tacitly.
And yeah, you would have understood what the word tacitly meant as a 12-year-old.
No, not as a 12-year-old.
So I don't get it, man. I just don't.
But well, you know, you're comparing apples and oranges. You're comparing my use of language as a 53-year-old to a logical process of a 13-year-old. I'm saying a 13-year-old says... Hey, the government says I can get condoms. Oh, it must be for my health and safety. That makes no sense to me. I wouldn't hear a 13-year-old
saying that.
Well,
because I would assume people would be telling them that. That when you just can't go online and say, here's free condoms, the next gangbang is down the street. You know, that there is some warning
that's
that
come up.
That's
a big leap. I mean, that's
a big
leap.
Well, but you know what I'm saying? Like, that when they go to order this, that disclaimers don't pop up on the screen and say, the use of these can help prevent this, this, and this. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
My point is, and I mean, we can take it literally if you want. you can take it literally if you want, and I think that you're taking it too literally. My point is that the government is enabling minors to buy things for activity that is essentially illegal. And you're saying, well, it's for their benefit, so that's okay.
Because they're going
to
do it.
No, well, I disagree.
Well, you can disagree.
That's just
all
like
you want.
That's just like giving up.
You can
and let's go read Lord of the Flies and give up.
The maternity wards in the Knox County alone disagree with you. They're doing it and they're having kids.
Not at 12 and 13. At 12 and 13?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I'll have to check that stat.
You and I know someone who had a child that young.
I know no one.
When we're off the air, we'll talk about it. You and I know somebody who had a child that young. it happens. It's happening more. And okay. That's why they're ending up in the NICU, because they're too young. You know what I mean? So these babies are being born way too small. And so, you know what I mean? That's how I run into
it. I mean, that may prove my point, that as a society, we're making it more and more permissible for children to engage in sexually oriented activity.
But they've been, so why not put something out there?
Why have they? They've just been?
Because
so we're going to give in and say, oh, it's okay? So we're just going to give in and say it's okay now. I don't agree.
I don't think so as parents, but
I think somebody should stand up and say,
here's something we can do.
If you're going to spend my tax dollars on some kind of program, spend it on a public education program, not handing out free condoms to minors.
Well, now in that respect, they do spend money on that. Because my son, who's 3 years old and in preschool, had what you blanketly called sex education and was taught about his parts and what to do if someone touched him. Now, that comes under the blanket of sex education. When we went for the first day, they said, hey, look, you have to sign this paper because we're required by the state of Tennessee to teach this curriculum about what happened. And there are scenarios in there about Aunt Sally and Uncle Howard if they do whatever. And they teach the kids, this is wrong. If someone touches you, you know what I mean? But that comes under a blanket of sex education.
And that's fine.
The kids would never see that. Obviously, they don't know what that means.
You know, they notified you of that and asked you if that's okay to teach them. And you know, that's, to me, that's a separate argument.
Right.
But I think that we're in, as a society, we're moving the needle younger and younger.
I don't disagree with that at all.
And that's my point.
I just think that from the government side of view, they're thinking, we need to do something to help.
Ain't the government's job. Not to do it in that way.
The government's job is to help protect the people.
Not to do it in that way. And the people, when it's my minor child, not up to the government, unless that child is being abused or something like that. No, I don't agree. All right. You want a last word, Fran?
No, I'll
give you the last word.
No. Your studio. You get it.
Yeah, that's not my studio, my friend. This is the Unfiltered, Unfettered Studios. Yeah. All right, let's go. All right, here we go. We're going to go to a clip from Scott Pelley and some of his comments on the media.
But I do want to talk about something that's been on my mind and something that I think would have been on Fred's mind as well. Our house is on fire. We didn't build this house. It was built by Fred Friendly and A.O. Sulzberger and Harrison Salisbury and Ida Tarbell and all the people who came before us, who built this magnificent mansion that we call American journalism. But today, right now, as we occupy this house that was built for us, our house is on fire. These have been a bad few months for journalism. We're getting the big stories wrong over and over again.
All right, Fran, so this is Scott Pelley, respected CBS anchorman, reporting the news in some comments that he made at a college. And it kind of, for me, it harkens back to what you actually talked about when we were talking about the Boston bombings, where you said, you know, the media got this wrong over and over.
Yeah, not one thing right did they get.
And now here we have this respected guy saying, we're getting it wrong. And of course, you know, I don't. Not only are they getting it wrong, they're getting it slanted, and they're just doing it wrong. It's a different world for media these days, but the media is doing us no favors.
Right, and I think it's a totally different story when you're adding your own bias to the news than when you're adding your own bias and getting it wrong.
Right,
when you're getting the main facts wrong, and the Boston. And I would bet that the Boston story is what the massacre is, or the bombing, I should say, is what triggered this for him. I mean, I was glued to that, as I'm sure a lot of people were. They could not get a fact straight. No sooner, I mean, the FBI took to a constant Twitter feed to correct what was coming out of them. Now Scott Pelley is part of the quote unquote liberal mainstream media,
right?
And he's calling out his buddies here. Now, I got to be honest, I don't think much of Scott Pelley, not a fan of his. His running of the debates during the Republican primary were god-awful. I mean, god-awful. His timing was horrible. His questions were ridiculous. And I took him to task several times for it. So I'm a little surprised by this, because he's laying bare what a lot of us believed and really knew for a long time. I think Twitter, other social media outlets have started to pull that Band-Aid back even further, saying, you boys aren't even getting close to this. You're not even getting close to the facts.
Right, and... You know, for me, it's one thing to say that they're getting it wrong, which they are, but there's some other factors here, I think, too. And we're going to talk about some other topics here, the AP, government spying on the AP, a little bit about Benghazi. But, you know, I want to go back to a New York Times headline in which they said, and this is on the IRS scandal that's just now breaking and coming out. The headline in the New York Times was, IRS focus on conservatives gives GOP an issue to seize on. So what the New York Times is doing is they're saying the story isn't even about the IRS scandal.
Right.
It's about the Republicans getting a scandal to hang their hats on. I mean, how irresponsible is that to not go into some Woodward Bernstein type of
right.
reporting on this and find out what really happened and what's going on? And they're doing this on Benghazi as well.
Yeah, well, and they've been trying to kind of gloss this Benghazi thing out of the news for the longest time. So I would have thought that when this IRS thing came on, they would have ran with it, because that would have pushed Benghazi all the way to the back burner. And some pretty noted conservative columnists like Charles Krauthammer that we've talked about a few times said the Benghazi story probably won't bring down Obama's presidency. But this IRS story could easily bring him down. This is the one that's more comparable to Nixon's Watergate than the Benghazi story.
Right.
Because, you know, that is several levels below the Benghazi story. But the IRS story, the Tea Partiers are Obama's main opponents, right? They're his main detractors. And the IRS is attacking them.
Unbelievable.
And MSNBC, Wall Street Journal. I mean, MSNBC, instead of talking about what the IRS was doing, tried to find comparable stories where liberals were being attacked.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's like... They're not even a news station, right? When they don't, on the weekends and on Friday nights, they play lockup marathons. If you've not seen that show, right? They go into a prison and they film it, right, for 24 hours. So, you know, other news stations have news Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So I don't even know what they're doing.
Well, let's go to a clip and see what the president said, some of his initial comments on the IRS.
And we'll
IRS
talk about the newsroom
scandal.
After that, too. The press conference,
yeah.
Dramatic difference.
Yeah. So let's take a listen to this.
Well, let me take the IRS situation first. I first learned about it from the same news reports that I think most people learned about this. I think it was on Friday. This is pretty straightforward. If, in fact, IRS personnel engaged in the kind of practices that have been reported on and were intentionally targeting conservative groups, then that's outrageous. And there's no place for it. You know, they have to be held fully accountable because the IRS, as an independent agency, requires absolute integrity, and people have to have confidence that they're applying it in a nonpartisan way.
All right, so let me just start off, Francis, with my criticism of this comment. When the President of the United States, on a scandal this magnitude, comes out and says, I heard about this the same way you did. So you're telling me, President Obama, that you woke up at 6, turned on a little HLN with Robin Mead, and heard her reporting on the IRS. That's how you found out about it. And, by the way, Fran, if this is true, what did he say? It's horrific. It's
oh yeah. Well,
what was the word that he used?
Because I was just laughing so hard. Look, man, if it is true, I never would have said that out loud. I would have lied.
Right.
I would have said, "Hey, Jack Lew came into me, or such and such came into me at 1 a.m. and said, hey, we found an issue on the IRS. Here's what's going on. You know, you've got to seem in control." But what he's trying to do is lay the framework for plausible deniability. Right. This is what he's doing. He's laying the groundwork. Saying, "Well, look, I didn't know about it. But now that I know, I'm going to jump on people's heads," which I still don't think he's going to do that. I think he's going to fumble this pretty badly, but because that's really been his MO, right? I mean, he really doesn't. He's not a guy. He's not a 10-catch, 100-yard guy. I mean,
he's not
going to do it. So he's going to jack this up.
When we already know Boehner's come out and said, "Who's going to jail?"
That was a great comment. You know,
right?
Again, not a big fan of Boehner, but that was a phenomenal comment. I don't want to know who's getting fired. I want to know who's going to jail.
Right. He said, "Now my question isn't about who's going to resign. My question is, who's going to jail over this scandal?" That's right.
Yeah, if you don't need to resign, we'll take you out in handcuffs. We can skip that stuff. You can go right to jail. This to me is more serious than Benghazi, because this is
yeah,
you can construe that the president is manipulating a branch or an office of the government to attack his opponents. In whatever manner, I think the most disturbing, and we talked about this, is not so much the looking into the financial records of Tea Party members applying for tax-exempt status as a political action committee or whatever, but it's the willful attempt to get member lists. That's frightening. You know, I mean, now you're talking about Nixonian-style blacklists.
Well, and let's talk about that Nixonian-style kind of a scandal, because let's face it, friend. I mean, I'm willing, on the surface of it, to not believe that Obama ordered the IRS to do this.
Right.
All right? But what do you do when you find out about it? See, that's what always hangs everybody.
And that's what hung Nixon, right?
And they're not really coming out of the gate well on this thing.
Right.
In addition to the fact that, as we kind of go into our next topic, about the government spying on AP reporters. I mean, these are two incredible scandals in an amazingly short period of time.
In a week, this all came out, right? Yeah, the whistleblowers on Benghazi, then all of a sudden this IRS story breaks, then the AP story pops out where they were taking the Facebook postings, Twitter postings, files of these AP reporters, phone numbers, text messages. I mean, you know, and so you and it may, those may not be related, because again, I'm not necessarily sure that the president orders the IRS, or does he drop, or as one guy put it today, I forget who it was, I wish I could give them credit for it, but who said it wasn't that Nixon ordered the break-in at Watergate.
Right.
It was the atmosphere he created that caused them to, you know what I mean? So what atmosphere is this president creating behind closed doors that is causing people to say, you know what, we get the IRS to look into these people because that's not a political arm and blah, 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 you know what I mean? You could smoke screen it, you know, that type of thing. I could see that happening. So he doesn't necessarily say, go do it. But the atmosphere he creates could cause his people to say, we need to do this.
Well, and what's happening with the Justice Department, we found out that they're tapping into the AP reporters, gives a whole new light on Woodward's previous statement
about
you know, what is going on here?
Right.
I'm feeling very uncomfortable.
Right. Right.
Or in his lexicon, very uncomfortable with this, right? Hey, and now I start to wonder about, like, did he know more about that?
Right. Was he on a nerve and then somebody actually threatened him now? Right? Now you got to go back to that comment and say, maybe he really did get threatened. I mean, you're talking about some serious cyber invasion of people's privacy that they're engaging in with these AP reporters. And what were the reporters writing about prior to that occurring? They were writing about Benghazi. They're writing about some shenanigans going on during the campaign, about the fact that Obama called Mitt Romney a murderer left-handedly in one of his campaign ads. And then all of a sudden, AP reporters are getting attacked, you know, on all their personal devices and their social media accounts. And
so these scandalous type of actions are certainly start to stack up like cordwood before the winter. In addition to the fact that, let's talk just a little bit, Fran, and I'll kind of turn this over to you about the White House press secretary, who we both agreed before the podcast started couldn't carry Ari Fleischer's piss bucket.
I mean, Ari Fleischer was a jackass.
He was a jackass, but he was a good press secretary.
You know, and he was a lying SOB, and we all knew it. But you knew it because you knew the kind of lies he was telling were necessary for the country and for what was going on, right? I mean, and they all do it. Let's just say Dana Perino, Bush's at the end, she was lying through her teeth about things, but there was a war going on.
She was a sweetheart, though.
She was a sweetheart. That always makes it better. But Jay Carney got caught lying about two things. In the midst of realizing he had just lied about President Obama's, what he said about Benghazi, he then let out on the AP reporter story because Jake Tapper fired a question at him about AP. And let me tell you something. He might be part of liberal media. Jake Tapper is one shrewd dude. If you ever listen to the White House press conferences, that dude asked questions at the right time. Carney was on his heels about Benghazi, and Tapper said, I'm going to go a different direction here. He fired off a question about the AP reporters. And Carney says, well, in 07, Senator Obama was for the protection of reporters, just like he is now. And Senator Obama was steadfast against the Reporter Protection Act, and I can't think of the official name of it, but it was the Journalistic Shield Act that was going to give the journalists shields from government intrusion. Senator Obama couldn't have been more against it. So Carney got caught lying there. Then Tapper reversed field and went back to Benghazi and caught him, Carney, lying about, either caught Carney lying about or caught the administration in a lie that they fed to Carney about the timeline of events and Susan Rice's testimony, not testimony, I shouldn't say that, her interviews on the Sunday talk shows.
Right.
And, I mean, the president had a bad week. His press secretary had a worse week.
Yes.
A worse week. It was, and then the IRS, the lady in charge of the branch of the IRS that conducted these investigations, was on a phone interview that I happened to be able to listen to. And she said, yes, it was wrong. We should not have done that. It was wrong. That was it. Like, that's all we're going to do. It was wrong.
Right.
Right? It was kind of like George Costanza. Was that wrong? If I had known that,
well,
was wrong,
that's kind of like the administration's response to a lot of stuff. It's like, huh? What?
Right.
Well, we just found out about this.
So
what?
Then the guy
like,
says,
really?
Well, what do you think the percentage of Tea Party organizations did you investigate? And she said, I believe it was 25 or 26. So what's that about... I want to say there's 275 organizations, officially, registered organizations. And so she said, what is that, like 50%? And I'm like, really?
Yeah.
The IRS lady just said 50. And then she laughed. And she said, yeah, I don't know. I'm not good with numbers.
Yeah.
This is the lady in charge of the IRS. She says, I'm not good with numbers. Are you kidding? You know, comedians couldn't write that. I mean, it's a bad week for the administration. I'll tell you what. This IRS issue, much like the Woodward and Bernstein pulling at that thread, because Woodward happened to be in the courtroom when those guys got arraigned for breaking into Watergate, something smelled wrong to him, and he started pulling. This is already three furlongs down the track. We could be on the precipice of something historic here.
Yeah.
The first black president, and then the second president who has to resign. I mean, it's slightly far-fetched right now, but we're getting closer to that edge.
The scandals are adding up. They're starting to build up.
And this IRS thing is building up steam. And, it's going to be ugly for the next couple of years, I think.
It's going to provide us some fodder for the next few months, I think, here on Unfiltered and Unfettered. All right, Francis, put on your thinking cap. It's time.
Oh, it's time. Let me get my scorecard.
Who said that? Who said that?
All right, Fran, it's our favorite subject, so keep score. I'm coming out of the gate. Got some tough ones, got some easy ones tonight.
Let's see.
All right, here we start out, and here's the quote. We got a black president, can't even go talk to him. How about that one? I'll put it like this. Obama can't do shit. I don't know why he won't do it, so do that bullshit. And your choices are...
That's got to be lyrics from a song, right?
It's not.
You're lying.
And your choices are Denzel Washington, Dennis Rodman, Ice Cube.
Denzel don't have a potty mouth. Let me tell you, that's one good looking man. No way he talks like that. And that might be too coherent for Dennis Rodman. Man, I tell you what, this is Denzel. I'm going to cry myself to sleep tonight. I'm going to go with the worm. I'm going to go with Robin on that.
Robin, right. Talking about his boy there in South Korea, Kim Jong-un. Yeah. Why Obama won't go over there and just talk to him and get his buddy released.
Give him a hug.
Well, he's trying to get that guy released, right? That Thomas Day
or
whatever.
Yeah.
So Dennis said he's going to get him out of there.
Nice.
So.
Good for the worm.
All right. One for one.
All right.
Number two. This is a little historical here.
Right.
If you have always believed that everyone should play by the same rules and be judged by the same standards, that would have gotten you labeled a radical 60 years ago, a liberal 30 years ago, and a racist today. And your choices are Thomas Sowell, Joe Biden, and Sarah Palin.
Oh, no.
I just got to get my girl in there.
Oh, my gosh. You always got to throw her in there. There's no way this could be Joe Biden, because his latest quote was, if shotguns could shoot chocolate, we'd all be happy. Have you heard that one?
I haven't.
He said that in public. So I'm going to eliminate Joe Biden, I think. And this is what the world has come to. I'm down to Thomas Sowell or Sarah Palin. This is the apocalyptic...
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
This is a dividing line, my friend.
Yeah. See, you gave no indication of what era we're talking about, so I can't eliminate him based on time. Oh, I'll go with Sarah Palin. God help me.
Thomas Sowell.
Yeah.
Thomas Sowell. Okay, one for one. All right, three.
Sooner or later, you're going to say something smart that she actually said. That could be 35 episodes from now.
I'm going to throw her in there every time. Okay, number three. The nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help.
I know who said this.
And your choices are, yeah, this should be a good one. George Bush, Ronald Reagan, Richard Nixon.
Ronnie Reagan.
Ronald Reagan. All right, you're two for one. I kind of threw you a bone on that. I really expected you to get that one. Okay, the next one, this could be tricky. And here's the quote. Mothers all want their sons to grow up to be president, but they don't want them to become politicians in the process. Ooh. And your choices are John F. Kennedy, Will Rogers, Mark Twain.
Don't say Will Rogers on that.
John F. Kennedy.
Ugh.
John F. Kennedy.
Oh, this could be a bad night.
All right, you're two for four. Got to come strong. And this last one's it's a toughie, my friend. I'm sorry. I'm almost regretting I threw this.
Could be my first losing record.
Okay, here we go. The black man in his mind is the stereotype. Yeah, what? You know, that dude. That guy exists, but that's not the range of the black experience. So then, when I meet you, when I talk to you again, I'll give you the black dude and I will beat your ass in public. And your choices are Tyler Perry, Wayne Brady, Will Smith.
Oh man, Will Smith was just in the news too. God, if it's Tyler Perry, oh, I'm gonna feel bad.
This is a tough one, man.
Yeah,
this is. You know,
I'm stuck between. You say Wayne Brady,
Tyler Perry, Wayne Brady,
yeah,
Will
I'm stuck
Smith.
Stuck between Wayne Brady and Will Smith. Because I just can't believe in my heart that that's something that came out of Tyler Perry's mouth. I'm going to go Will Smith only because he was in the news for his new movie. And
Wayne Brady.
Wayne
sorry,
Brady.
Man.
Oh,
I'm sorry.
In the ballpark.
It was Wayne Brady's response to a comment Bill Maher said about Barack Obama basically being like Wayne Brady, meaning you're not black enough. You're not a real black man. So Wayne Brady come out and said, basically, I'll beat your ass in public.
Was Brady on the show at that time?
No.
Oh.
He said that
he through the Huffington
Press. Yeah. two for five tonight. Yeah, that was a tough one.
It had
night.
To come sooner or later.
You got, you know, there's area there, but, you know, still undefeated.
Dude, the game is sweeping the nation. I just gave the nation hope that they're going to beat me tonight.
All right. That's tonight's episode of Who Said That. And that means it's time for Hardcore Politics. Francis, what you got for us tonight?
Well, I'll tell you what. The topic tonight is when second terms go bad. And clearly we've covered what's going on with President Obama's second term. But, you know, you've got to... Well, you don't have to go back too far, but we've just had three presidents in a row get two terms. And there's a lot of elation when they get that second term. Oh, yeah, you know, the country has given them a mandate to move on. And, you know, even Obama got a bigger number of popular vote the second time around, which still boggles my mind, but even though I like the guy. But it turns out, Tony, when you get a second term, it doesn't necessarily go the way you want it. Of course, Lewinsky happened in Clinton's second term, right? Got a little too comfortable in his second term, so things went bad for him, kind of derailed. You know, he just pretty much had been humbled, and I think you and I both agree, even though that you're a pretty conservative guy, that Clinton was doing his best out of probably the last liberal presidents we can name in the modern era to work with his counterparts and run a fairly somewhat compromising, you know, a compromised approach to politics. And
he was accused of being too responsive to public opinion polls, which I happen to think maybe was more of a good thing than a bad thing.
Right. Today we would say that he was consorting with the enemy if you were a liberal, right? But outside of that Lewinsky scandal, you know, you'd have to make a case that he had a pretty good run as a president. President Bush, same thing. Then he gets mired in a war in Iraq that comes out that there were no WMDs in Iraq in the second term. Colin Powell kind of turns on him in the second term when he leaves the administration. So, you know, it was a rough... And hey, man, even in Knoxville, they were protesting in the streets. And these people... Now, Coyne's going to kill me for this generalization, but I'm going to make it anyway because he ain't here. They rarely get up for anything in Knoxville, political related. And there wasn't, I shouldn't say there were a lot of people there, but, you know, we'd see him, Tracy and I would see him every Sunday, you know, we're riding into the campus where the church that we go to happens to be. And, you know, there's 10 or 12 hippies out there on the corner with their signs about Peach Bush and he's a baby killer and all this. So, so it even reached our little hamlet of go along, get along Knoxville, right? That's how kind of ugly it got for Bush in that second term. But let me tell you something. Neither one of those combined compared to what's getting ready to happen to our current president. He is in for a storm of epic proportions. I mean, he's already in it. I mean, the eye is upon him, and second terms just don't seem to be the way to go. It's, you know, it's kind of like the NCAA. You'd probably rather be one and done and collect your money. Get out on the speech circuit and collect your millions after your first term and preserve some of your age, because you're going, I mean, I watched the White House Correspondents' Dinner. The dude looked a lot older than 4 years.
Yeah.
You wait till you see these next 3 years about what he's got. So much stuff. He don't have enough burners to hold it all.
Right.
I mean, it's going to be ugly. So, yeah, second terms are not always. You be careful what you wish for. They're not always what you expect.
And that is hardcore politics. All right, here we go. We're starting out with what's your pick? Starting out with Kim Jong Un or Ahmadinejad?
The dictator question. You know what? I got to go with Kim Jong only because he provides a lot more comedic relief. Ahmadinejad he just seems angry all the time.
I'm going to go with Ahmadinejad only because Kim Jong Un is like a nutcase in charge of a country. He does provide, I agree, a lot more
fun.
Comic relief. Ahmadinejad said the Holocaust didn't happen. I mean, this guy gets serious about his nuttiness. He's not just flippant about it.
He's committed to it. Yeah, absolutely.
He's committed to it. Okay, let's see. All right, lap band surgery or the Atkins diet? Francis, I got a feeling how you're going to go on this.
Oh, do you?
Well, if you needed it.
For effectiveness, I'm going lap band. But for the ease of it, I would pick Atkins. You know, because Atkins is like...
I'm going with Atkins because you can eat bacon and whipped cream.
I was getting ready to say, it's like a hamburger wrapped in bacon dipped in whipped cream, and that's okay, you know? And so, I mean, why wouldn't you go for that? But effective-wise, I mean, lap band surgery is you know, 9 miles ahead of what Atkins.
It's died. Severe though. You got to be seriously overweight.
Well, right,
for that,
see, that's irony. Like, yeah. You and I, we couldn't even get it. We're right. Not even overweight enough to get it.
Right.
Maybe a couple more hamburgers dipped in whipped cream, I'll get there.
Okay, this is one we've done before, Francis. Actually, though, NBA Finals or Stanley Cup?
Well, now, okay, so now we're a couple weeks deep. I don't know what you've been watching, what you haven't, but there's been some overtime games.
Yep.
In hockey. There was a huge comeback by the
historic
Boston Bruins.
By the Boston Bruins.
You know, and you know, our boy Chris.
OMG, 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 like a 16-year-old girl.
Burning up Facebook with his Bruins posts, right? So so the question is now, what's more exciting? Is it the NBA Finals or NHL? And I'm going NHL. And I've been watching both. And, man, I'll tell you what, the Eastern Conference, where your boy LeBron is playing, it sucks. Like, the games are boring. Like, it's going to be
right. The
Heat. LeBron's Heat against whoever can get through the rest of the teams.
I'm sticking with the NBA final for two reasons. One, I think if Memphis makes it, they are a physically tough team, and they might be able to challenge. I don't think they'll win. They might be able to challenge. The other thing is I'll pull for the Spurs just because of Duncan and you know, kind of a sentimental favorite. And I'm going with the finals.
Well, I'm going
You're
with Stanley
Cup guy.
Yeah, because it's just been some exciting hockey. I mean, I can't remember last time my team's been eliminated. My team didn't even make the Flyers didn't make the playoffs, but I've stayed up late night watching games, going to overtime, and it's been a while since I've done that, so I'm going Stanley Cup.
All right, next up, Francis, Chicago-style deep-dish pizza versus regular crust. What I guess you'd just call it regular crust, Brooklyn-style, I don't know.
First of all, there's no such thing as – I mean, there is, but – Not to a Northeasterner is there a such thing as a Chicago-style pizza. Mac and Manco's on the boardwalk in Ocean City, New Jersey. Mario's Pizzeria in Mays Landing where I grew up. These are places that make pizza. I'm not a fan of the Chicago thing. I the deep dish. Because let me tell you something. You know, I always get on you about these slippery slopes you create about the government. Here's one that you could ski down. First you go pan pizza, deep dish, then you go square crust. Now all of a sudden we got fruit on the friggin' pizza, and then we got this thing called Hawaiian pizza. I mean, this is ridiculous. No, I am the regular guy, regular pizza guy.
Oh, I'm regular all the way.
Really? I thought you were going to Chicago.
No, no. Coming back from, I've been up there twice. I go to the, you know, the popular, I can't remember the name of it now, popular place to get a Chicago deep dish style pan pizza. Dude, it's not good. It's like a big doughy cheese ball.
Yeah, I agree.
Give me some regular crust. I'll even go thin crust with a little pepperoni bacon. Happens to be a family favorite. Yeah, I'll go with either one of those before I go with the Chicago pan. All right, so we agree on that. Let's go one more. Since it is barbecuing season, Fran, let's go hot dogs, microwave or grill.
Well, you know, the reason this is on here is because our one-year-old is starting to eat regular foods now, and she was taking a liking to her three-year-old brother's hot dogs. So I made her one, and neither one, like Frank, well, she doesn't care, but Frank doesn't like them on the grill. He's grown up on a microwave because you dice it up, throw it in the microwave 25 seconds, and he's eating the hot dog, and he's happy about it. She likes it the same way, so I thought, man, it's a lot easier in the microwave than firing up the grill for a couple hot dogs. So, I would take a grill, but microwave for the kids, it's just too easy not to go with it.
I'm not a big hot dog guy, but I gotta go microwave too. They stay juicier than drying them out, frying them up on the grill.
Yeah. I'm not a fan of burnt.
All right, Francis, our next entry on the big board, going to go Republican tonight.
Yeah, I'm up to Republicans, and it's our man of lap band surgery fame, Governor Chris Christie in New Jersey. Republican, born in Newark, 1962. He's 50 years old. Married to Pat with four kids, went to University of Delaware, then got his master's degree from Seton Hall. He's a former U.S. District Attorney for New Jersey. He was nominated by Bush 43 for that position, and he served it pretty aggressively for the time that he was there, which led to him being governor of New Jersey. So, born and bred, Garden Stater. He never left the state other than to go to college, which he left by 2 minutes to go across the river to go to the University of Delaware. And, of course, he's become most famous in the last year for throwing his arm around the president and giving him a little praise for when the hurricane destroyed the Jersey Shore and the president came.
I think he deserves on the big board. I think he's a long shot. I think he's incredibly popular local politician. I think, you know, he's not going to get Democratic support, and I think he's started to alienate some Republicans. It's going to be hard for him to recover from that. He's got to.
When you find yourself when you're a potential candidate for 2016 and you find yourself saying to a Fox interviewer, "I'm a good Republican."
Yeah,
it's probably not going to go well for you. I think you're right. I think he's a long shot, and we're into the long shots. That's why he's on there now and not at the beginning.
But again, incredibly popular local politician. I mean, he works it out for the people. We've not denied that. We've played some of his clips on our podcast. We think he's a very candid, likable guy. He just he alienated himself politically.
And that's the X factor. Like, he probably won't get – he'll get some – I would disagree with you. I think he'll get some liberal support.
Right.
But I think what he'll really make a cut into is that independent people. When he gets into the primary season – you know, he's plain spoken and he's to the point, and that's not a put on like McCain and like some of these other people who try to put out that folksy, you know, "I'm one of you" types. This guy is one of them.
Yeah.
And he talks like it, and he doesn't censor himself. He could be on our podcast the way he runs his mouth. But so that could, you know what I mean, that could be the X factor in the primary season. You just never know how that thing's going to go. Although his problem is now there's just a huge, strong five of Republican candidates who are going to run against him. So I think you're right. I think he's on
and
the
Bobby outside. Jindal keeps coming on really strong.
He's on the outside looking in, no doubt.
Yeah. Okay, so Governor Chris Christie going from New Jersey, going up on the big board. All right, and thus concludes another episode of Unfiltered, Unfettered. It has certainly been a great episode. Going to look forward to doing another one again in 2 weeks if we don't get shut down by the IRS in the meantime.
Yeah, we'll check your phone for taps.
We're liable to be back again like the North American common brown cockroach. Or for our Hispanic listeners, La Cucaracha. So, just want to throw that
in. For our Spanish listeners.
Francis, stay tuned, stay sharp.
As always.
And for our listeners, we'll be back in another 2 weeks. Thanks for the listen. Had a lot of fun. Emily, take us out.
Tony and Fran, you did it again. Thank you for getting unfiltered and unfettered.